Blau ist Metall, grün ist anerkannt.
Stefan de Kremer stands at a luggage scanner in the arrivals hall of the Brussels International Airport. He explains the colors on the screen. Blue for anything made of metal, orange for organic, and green for non-organic. It's not yet 7 in the morning. Passengers queue patiently to have their suitcases, bags and cooler boxes scanned.
Das kann Fleisch sein.
The Krämer points to a dark mass on the screen. This here and here could be meat, he says, and directs his colleagues to open the bag. Today the customs officers are targeting meat, from domestic animals but also wild meat, from monkeys, turtles, porcupines, cane rats and snakes. Such meat is often called bush meat, or in French, viande de brousse. For public and animal health and conservation reasons, it is illegal to bring any kind of meat or meat products into the European Union. The custom officials are, of course, also on the lookout for fruit, weapons, illicit medication, large amounts of cash, counterfeit goods and drugs. Many of the passengers are carrying food products with them – avocados, manioc, peanuts, mangoes, smoked fish, grilled goat meat, cow skin and wild meat. This is Living Planet. My name is Neil King, and this deep dive on bushmeat by Laura Salm-Reifferscheid was developed with the support of Journalism Fund Europe. Let's dive back into Brussels International Airport, where customs officers are controlling the luggage of arrivals from Africa.
What was it?
A customs officer bends over a cooler box and points at a shiny black beetle that is disappearing under a heap of smoked fish. Quickly, she throws the lid on the box and shoves the whole thing into a large garbage bag. The owner of the box, who has just arrived from Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, looks on in horror. The passenger tries to argue, but the customs officer is not to be persuaded. Even legal foodstuffs like smoked fish are confiscated and destroyed if contaminated with beetles, flies, maggots or other insects, as they could potentially become invasive species here. The lady's second cooler box is also opened.
Madame, c'est interdit, eh? C'est bon de poisson. Madame!
The customs officer pulls out a couple of plastic bags and empties them onto the metal tabletop. Half frozen pieces of meat. Carefully she picks one up and looks at it in disbelief. It is the head of a turtle. Altogether there are parts of around 20 turtles. In the other bag are pieces of a small crocodile. Once again everything is confiscated. This time because of a possible violation of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, or CITES. One never knows what one will find, says the officer.
It's normally all the African flies that come through that they have something like a CITES, like some animals that are protected. For the people that we find in the luggage, it's very normal to bring monkey or like a snake or anything. It's very normal for them. So, sometimes I've been really mad at the people and I tell them it's protection. And I'm like, yeah, but it's very delicious. And you can, it's a discussion that never ends.
Meanwhile, the woman whose luggage was searched is devastated. She spent a lot of money on the meat in Kinshasa, she says, and it was meant for a special occasion.
Pour nous, c'est pendant le mariage.
Her sister's wedding is coming up here in Belgium, and her fiancé comes from a region, the DRC, where this meat is a delicacy. They had planned to serve it to the wedding guests. Today, the luggage of all passengers on three flights from the African continent and two from China were checked. Nearly 194 kilograms of meat and meat products were confiscated. Without expert investigation, it is difficult to say exactly how much of it was bushmeat. Not everything was as clearly identifiable as the turtles and crocodile. More than 8,000 kilometers from Brussels airport, in the heart of the DRC, Souverain Bassot and his hunting companion step out of the dense forest into a clearing. On his back, Bassot carries a shotgun and a basket made of lianas filled with their spoils. Two monkeys, a large rodent, a porcupine and a small antelope. Nowadays, he says, they rarely find large animals, even after a week's hunting. Yo.
We hunt during the day. We go into the heart of the forest looking for animals, and at sunset we return to our campsite where we make a fire, cook and clean. During the night we go back to the forest with our torches to look for those animals that are active at night. Sometimes we sleep in the middle of the forest, even if it's raining, with no shelter, no tent, nothing.
More and more hunters step into the clearing and arrange their wares on the sandy soil. The charred carcasses are pierced by wooden sticks. Usually the hunters smoke their prey so the meat does not rot. Merchants are already waiting impatiently. Each tries to grab the best pieces, hoping to sell them at the market in Yangambi, a small village along the majestic Congo River, a few hours away by motorbike. Jonas Nyumu observes the scene. He is a researcher from the Center for International Forestry Research, or CIFOR. Together with his colleagues, he has studied the value chain of bushmeat from source to consumer.
It's illegal because we're in the off-season, according to Congolese law. It's the breeding season right now. But in the villages, hunting is the only livelihood. That's why they don't respect the ban and carry on hunting.
According to CIFOR, the hunters don't keep the meat for themselves anymore, but rather sell the majority of it. With the profit, they buy household necessities and more affordable but less nutritious food. As a result, children in rural areas are often malnourished. Their hunting is also no longer sustainable. Hunting bans are often not enforced. Hunters have to penetrate deeper into the forest to find prey. Roads built by mining and logging companies make this possible. Millions of tons of bushmeat are extracted every year from the Congo Basin alone. Jean-Pierre Ngongo, who studied sustainable forest management at the University of Kisangani in the DRC, has seen the consequences this can have. He gives the example of the forest elephant. The last one was seen in the forest around Yangambi in the 1980s.
It has an impact on the ecosystems and even the climate issue. The elephants eat certain seeds, for example, from the tree species Guarea cedrata. The seeds don't germinate easily on their own, and it's the elephants that allow them to regenerate. They eat and then defecate the seeds, which brings them out of their dormancy and allows them to germinate more easily. This ensures the ongoing viability of the forest ecosystems. Now that the animals are on the verge of extinction, this impacts the flora.
Nowadays, more and more bushmeat ends up in the fast-growing cities of the DRC and other countries in Central and West Africa. Here, it no longer serves as a vital source of protein, but rather as a luxury product for a relatively wealthy urban clientele. And the meat of some wild animals is transported even further, from Kinshasa, Accra or Douala, to Brussels, Paris, Amsterdam and London, to meet demand from some members of the African diaspora. Prices for bushmeat are high in Europe. A woman with a tiny shop in Brussels has a smoked monkey going for €80. Souverain Bassot, the hunter in the DRC, would only earn around €2 for it. At the market in Kinshasa, it would go for 12. The seller in Brussels believes her high price is justified. The route from the forest to the table in Belgium is long. Friends and acquaintances bring the goods in their suitcases and sometimes need to be paid. The extra kilos of luggage cost money too, and sometimes the meat is confiscated. Other times, the seller, who wants to remain anonymous, gets her deliveries by freight. She opens a styrofoam box that has just arrived. The security tape wrapped around it reads, "Checked by Customs." The seller reaches down to the bottom of the box and pulls out a plastic bag hidden beneath layers of smoked fish, up to 20 kilos of which can legally be imported. Looking inside, she finds pieces of dried meat, some with the hide still on. "Wild pig," she says. The illegal produce from the DRC was likely overlooked by customs, or perhaps they didn't recognize the pieces as meat. Exactly how much wild meat comes into the EU is not known. According to Anne-Lise Chabert, most member states don't collect specific data on wild meat seizures. A veterinarian and epidemiologist, Chabert has been researching the trade in wild animals and their meat for many years. She teaches One Health at the University of Adelaide in Australia. But at the time of reporting, she was doing her research at the Paul Sabatier University in Toulouse.
Some people are bringing a little bit for their own consumption, and some people are bringing a lot for trade. And we know that we see people who had 90 kilos of bushmeat. It's a lot. And that was directly going to the market in Paris.
According to Interpol, the black market for illegal wildlife products for traditional Chinese medicine, the exotic pet trade, lab animals, ivory and wild meat, is worth up to $20 billion a year. However, Chabert thinks it unlikely that people who bring wild meat into the EU are connected to the organized crime groups linked with drug and arms networks that trade in pangolin scales or rhino horn. While not much research has been done on the illegal trade of wild meat into Europe, Chabert is one of the few scientists who have devoted themselves to this topic. Two studies she was involved in estimate that nearly 4 tons of wild meat come into Belgium through Brussels Airport every month, and approximately 23 tons a month through Roissy-Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. These numbers are likely just the tip of the iceberg. In day-to-day airport operations on the continent, only a small fraction of flights are comprehensively checked. Chabert thinks it probable that wild meat is going into all large cities of the European Union. Increasingly, wild meat vendors are finding their customers online. Georgia Kate Maloney, one of Anne-Lise Chabert's doctoral students, searched the dark web and social media for bushmeat.
This PhD student, analyzed 6 pages, Facebook pages, and looked at what was sold on a regular basis. And if it was possible to buy it from outside the country. And so she actually got in touch with different sellers, and they mentioned that, yes, you can buy it, we'll send it by post, and it's no problem. Yeah, so it's basically showing how feasible it was to buy meat online. And that's the reason why we ask, is the online market the new wet market? Because now the problem that we are facing is that with this online dimension, it's even more difficult to actually know how the meat is being transported, because which route the meat is taking, because it's sent by post.
On Facebook, Maloney found the meat of 25 species on offer. Among them were protected animals such as crocodile and pangolin. The latter are the most trafficked mammals in the world. Interestingly, nothing was found on the dark web, which could suggest that vendors don't see themselves as having anything to hide. According to Chabert's studies in France and Belgium, 30% of the species that were seized at the airports were CITES listed and often endangered. This could mean that threatened species are preferred in the international trade as they bring in more money. When people are caught with CITES listed species without appropriate certificates in their luggage, they often have to pay a fine. This varies from country to country, amount and species. In Belgium, for example, penalties could be as high as €50,000, with possible imprisonment for up to 5 years. However, such severe penalties are rarely enforced. The import of domestic meat, on the other hand, is not fined, despite it also being illegal. It is typically just confiscated. However, for customs officers, it is often impossible to determine exactly what meat they're dealing with without expert examination. But for biosafety reasons, seized foodstuffs are incinerated as soon as possible, leaving no time for further investigation. Chabert believes that the Australian approach could be the way to go. Passengers are shown an explanatory video during their flight, and then, on arrival, a landing card has to be filled out. On the card, travellers have to declare whether they are carrying any prohibited meat or other food products. If they are found to be lying, a hefty fine follows. This serves as a deterrent and makes the work of customs officials easier, as they do not have to identify specifically what kind of meat it is. To get a better overview of the wild meat entering Belgium and to set up a database on the trade that all government agencies can access, the Federal Public Service for Health, Food Chain Safety and Environment has initiated a research project. Sophie Rassils from the Institute of Natural Sciences in Brussels is project coordinator. Together with her colleagues, she takes samples of the meat seized at the airport. Back at the lab, DNA analysis is used to identify species.
And then there's giant pouch rats, for example, that are also often found. But actually for these rats, like often the taxonomy is also not well resolved. And so through the genetics, we also know that it's, for example, we had like one species that hasn't even been described as a species yet. So it's, that's interesting. And through the genetics as well, we can kind of like pinpoint from what location it came from. So we knew it like came from like Cameroon, for example. So those are interesting things.
So far, 208 samples taken in the first 6 months of the project have been analysed. The preliminary data shows that 70% of the seized meat came from domestic animals and 30% from wild animals. 6 samples came from protected species, such as a colobus monkey, a tree pangolin, and a Nile monitor lizard. The researchers also want to know whether potentially dangerous pathogens are coming into the EU with the meat. Poor hygiene measures, unregulated slaughter and handling, and the long transport routes can lead to bacterial contamination and to food poisoning. Even illegally imported domestic meat could potentially have a devastating economic impact on the EU livestock industry if, for example, pathogens such as the African swine fever virus or foot and mouth disease were accidentally imported and transmitted to local livestock. Since the 2014 to 2016 Ebola outbreak in West Africa and the more recent COVID-19 pandemic, zoonotic diseases have featured more prominently on the radar of both researchers and governments. 60% of known infectious diseases affecting humans are of zoonotic origin. In 2020, scientists from the Institute of Natural History examined the meat of a monkey they had bought undercover in Brussels.
For example, in the Brazos monkey, we found like an artery virus that is, well, that we know that occurs in these monkeys indeed in Africa. We could show that indeed like the virus is being co-imported with the meat into Europe. And also like it's also still not known whether these particular viruses can actually infect humans or not, but people expect that would happen at some point. It's the same as like with when you sample bats, you find like a whole wide variety of coronaviruses in them like every time that you go and sample bats. So most of them have never appeared in humans, but one time or a few times then it does, and then we all know what happens next.
However, the majority of the seized meat samples are smoked. This process kills off most germs if it is done thoroughly, making an infection of humans in Europe unlikely. Unlikely, but not impossible. And if an infection and outbreak were to occur, the consequences could be very serious indeed. This underscores the importance of knowing what kinds of wild meat and which pathogens are coming into the EU. Nonetheless, the more likely scenario is that the spillover of a disease from animals to humans would occur closer to the source of the meat. Hunters or butchers, for example, come into direct contact with the blood of hunted wild animals. We mustn't forget, says Anne-Lise Chabert, that HIV is zoonotic in origin, having evolved from simian immunodeficiency virus, or SIV.
And that was very much linked to bushmeat hunting. And everyone is speaking about what is the impact of COVID-19, which is very likely linked to animal-human interface in different reasons why they've been in contact. But we should also look at the impact of HIV. And that's also linked to animal-human interface. But this outbreak of HIV now is like is still happening. Like it's still very present, and we should remember that's actually linked to the human to wildlife contact.
Speaking to people from Cameroon and the DRC living in France or Belgium, they believe wild meat should be freely available in Europe, at least of those species that are not endangered, such as certain rodents. However, they also want their countries where the wild meat comes from to make an effort to fulfill CITES and public health requirements. Only then could there be a chance to legally commercialise the trade. As things stand, while the illegal importation of wild meat is clearly problematic, simply banning it does not seem to be the solution either. Researchers looking at the cultural dimensions of wild meat consumption suggest that we need to widen our view beyond the legal versus the illegal and better understand why this food is so important to some people. Sandrella Morrison-Lanyau, an EU biosurveillance expert at the University of Utrecht, studied wild meat consumption amongst the Ghanaian diaspora in the Netherlands. One major factor her research pointed to was the perceived health benefits. Study participants used words like organic, cleaner, leaner, and pointed to the meat being natural, as it comes from the wild. Morrison-Lanyau believes that inaccurate assumptions and an inadequate understanding of the demand for bushmeat in Europe could actually be affecting our ability to assess and mitigate risks that trade and consumption may pose in Europe. COVID was just a warning shot, she says.
The resounding bottom line here is that the groups of African participants that I have spoken to agree that they will not stop, you know, no matter what the fine, no matter what the risks, they will not discontinue seeking out wild African meat.
Morrison-Lanyau is also aware, however, that the issue is a sensitive one in Europe, especially given the potential for discrimination and stigmatization of consumers. Media often report negatively on wild meat. It is often portrayed as something disgusting and exotic, and is frequently mentioned in connection with infectious diseases like Ebola. Research by scientists such as Morrison-Lanyau could be weaponized in the political arena if a matter of biosecurity is instead twisted into an immigration issue. Food is always tightly bound to culture and identity, and wild meat is no different. Certain dishes may seem unappetizing to some, while others perceive them as a delicacy or even a status symbol. Biosecurity questions aside, why should wild boar from a European forest be seen differently from wild pig from the forests of Cameroon? In the view of Maud Istas from the Federal Ministry of Environment in Belgium, while she's well aware of the fact that there is a cultural dimension to people consuming wild meat from their country of origin in the EU, she feels there needs to be a shared baseline.
I think that the general prohibition at EU level that any passenger should not bring white meat is not against the cultural beliefs of people, because everybody is on the same, on an equal foot. So it can be also people from maybe Eastern Europe coming with a white boar. It is prohibited.
Théodore Treffont, on the other hand, a researcher at the Africa Museum in Tervuren, Belgium, feels a broader view is needed. He interviewed hunters, consumers, vendors, forest and city dwellers on bushmeat in the DRC and wrote a book about it.
It's easier to look at the legal and institutional frameworks than social norms. Social norms are something that are very, very, is very difficult for Europeans, Americans, whites in general, to grasp about why people are attached to eating wild meat. It's more than money, it's more than family, it's more than tradition, it's more than sustenance for nutritional reasons. It's all kinds of things together. And so my approach towards studying wild meat is we need to have an integrated, holistic approach. Otherwise, the silo effect, looking at it from a public health perspective, looking at it from a law enforcement perspective, looking at it from an economic counting of carcasses, that doesn't matter. What really matters is the people that eat it, why do they do it? People that trade it, why do they do it? All this overlapping between motivations that have very much to do with the real dynamics that govern Central African society.
The reasons for consuming wild meat in Europe are as diverse as they are on the African continent. However, in Europe, as in Africa, culture and tradition play an important role. Passion, for example, is originally from the DRC and has been living in Belgium for many years. His kids were born here, but he wants them to know their roots. So the family regularly eats meals of traditional dishes, including those with wild meat.
When we are together, we eat at home, we think and reflect together, and we have our culture that we bring here without forgetting to embrace and thank the culture that has welcomed us here. The advantage we have is that we have two cultures, and our children are growing up with two cultures, the one that they adopt here and the culture we try to convey to them. That is why we occasionally take them home, where we show them things that they can bring back here. They are little Belgians, but they will always be Africans.
Jean-Pierre Ngongo, who spoke about the elephants in Yangambi earlier, grew up in a rural area of the DRC. He's currently at the Université Libre de Bruxelles, analyzing plant samples for his doctoral thesis. While he doesn't buy wild meat in Europe himself, because he has seen the consequences of unsustainable hunting and the commercialization of the trade at home, it is nonetheless important to the community he grew up in. He recalls going hunting with a group of older men once during his school holidays. They shot a monkey and a duiker, known as mbengela in the local dialect. Ngongo gave some of the meat to the village chief, elders and his family, and sold the rest to buy school supplies for himself and his siblings. To this day, the villagers welcome him warmly whenever he visits, remembering his generosity.
The meat of mbengela is tied to family. When we find this meat, it brings joy and togetherness. It reminds us of past times. It's a meat that we eat a lot in our culture. For me, it is very important. When I see it, it brings back good times with my family. If I were to find it here in Europe, I wouldn't need the music in a bar to dance.
That deep dive was provided by Laura Salm-Reiferscheid. It was edited and voiced by me, Neil King. My sound engineer was Jürgen Kuhn. If you have any questions or story suggestions for us, please just send us an email, or better still, a voice message, to livingplanet@dw.com. Thank you for listening to Living Planet.